Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron.
So, Carlos Prieto, when you found out we were talking about solar power today, you started thinking about furniture. Is that what happened?
Well, not quite. So last month, my wife and I moved to this new place, and it's great. And of course, the first thing that we did when we got this new place is go to IKEA.
IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Fresh and clean.
And, you know, I think everyone's been to IKEA. It's a huge store.
It all began with a god named Thor. There were Vikings and boats and some plans for a furniture store.
And because it's a huge store, it has a huge parking lot. And what we found out this time is that half of that parking lot was just covered in solar panels.
IKEA, just a smoke and some pine and a handful of Norsemen.
And the other half, it looked like at least, was about to be covered in solar panels.
That sounds like a huge amount of panels. But then again, IKEA is a pretty massive store. Were you able, or did you even bother to investigate how much it'll mitigate the amount of power they use?
That's a good question. And yeah, if you think about it, IKEA uses a lot of power, not just because they sell appliances that take electricity, but also because they sell so much furniture and so many things that they want to make sure they have the right lighting.
So why are all of the products named like what white people name their kids now?
8 7 pounds, 4 ounces, Mala, her twin brother, Broar.
So if you think about it, it's a lot of power they're using. And I was able to find this video that talked about this specific project of solar panels at IKEA Baltimore.
Our sustainability team supports all of the functions in the organization.
And, you know, this video had all the words that you would think of.
We really want to generate as much renewable electricity for this site on site.
Renewable energy, sustainability.
Sustainability is a core piece of our foundation, and every piece of our business incorporates sustainability in one way or another.
All those things. But then in the middle of the video, there came this guy.
Our global ambition is to, by 2030, become climate positive.
They called him the market manager, and his name is Mikko Kolkkonen.
Mikko Kolkkonen.
Yeah, I think that's right. And he looks just what you would think, you know, an IKEA manager would look like. He's tall, he's blonde. You can probably find him eating Swedish meatballs. And he did talk about the impact that this kind of project is going to have on the amount of energy that their store is using.
We also want to strive to power our stores with 100% renewable energy and also reduce energy consumption by 40%.
And you know, from what it sounds like, IKEA isn't the only place where these solar panels are growing.
Repke School District in Batesville, Arkansas, prides itself on putting students first. But when it came to paying its teachers, Batesville was next to last in this part of the state. The school took an unused field out back and filled it with hundreds of solar panels. It also put up a new solar canopy stretching across the entire front of the high school.
So this week, the Solar Energy Industries Association and researchers at Wood Mackenzie released their big year-in-review report on solar. It said that the solar industry installed a record amount of capacity last year, even despite the pandemic, and that solar led all technologies in new electric generating capacity added. So that represented 43% of the mix. So, you know, those are all big deals. But then looking ahead, the report said the U.S. solar power capacity is expected to quadruple over the next decade.
In all, nearly 1,500 panels aimed at recharging Batesville's budget.
I'm Anthony Adragna. This is Politico Energy. And today.
And to put that in perspective, it would represent about 40% of all U.S. households.
Kelsey Tamburino on the growing power of solar energy. It's Thursday, March 18th. Do we know what is driving this projection of the industry quadrupling by 2030? Is it just that solar's so low cost now, or what are some of the factors that are driving this continued growth?
Yeah, the growth is still largely the fact that increasing cost competitiveness, like you said, but also through support from state and federal policies. The report itself notes this growth is across all market segments, but also Congress, for example, included as part of the spending deal last year, a 2-year extension of eligibility for the tax credit for building new solar projects. And so this report said that extension has increased the 5-year outlook for solar deployment by 17%. And beyond that, you know, it's still expected to grow.
The growth is occurring seemingly not just in one place, but kind of everywhere, and even some places that we don't necessarily think of as being super pro renewable energies. Where is a lot of this growth occurring, and are there any areas that are surprising, could be surprising to some people?
Yeah, so the report has a ranking of states, and it found that California, again, was the number one state for annual solar capacity additions, but also Texas had the number 2 spot and Florida the number 3 spot. And then beyond that, 27 states across the U.S. installed over 100 megawatts of new solar capacity, which would be a new record. You know, as we've talked on this podcast last week, you know, these are not necessarily blue states that are showing this growth, but it's across a lot of different regions of the country. In the top 10, there's still North Carolina, South Carolina, New York is on this, but so is Arizona and Utah, New Jersey and Colorado. There was research this week that looked at the challenges for solar. So it estimated how much solar utility PV installed capacity would be required to hit Biden's net zero target by 2050. And it basically found that that would occupy land roughly 50 times the size of Austin, Texas. So that's a pretty large chunk of land. And like, this gets at this issue of not every state is a good fit for large-scale solar plants, right? So there are certain southern states that could take on these larger scale projects than others, and I think you're seeing that in a lot of these red states.
And you had a chance to talk to the head of SEIA. What did she tell you about what they're hoping for from Congress this year as lawmakers consider infrastructure legislation?
Yeah. So I talked to SEIA's president and CEO, Abigail Ross Hopper, about where the industry is kind of at this moment and what they're asking for from Congress and the Biden administration. And she said the trade group is really keeping up its pressure on lawmakers to extend these tax credits for the industry, but also, you know, to calm the clean energy sector's nerves around the tariffs on imported products. They'd like to see action from the Biden administration there. I should note that she said that the trade group has had conversations with the Biden administration on infrastructure and tax credits, as well as trade and policy to help domestic manufacturing in the U.S., which are all priorities for the group.
For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. If you like our show, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And listen to our other shows, Politico Dispatch, Playbook Audio Briefing, and Nerdcast. I'm Anthony Dragna. Talk to you again tomorrow.
Last year, Chevron invested billions of dollars to bring affordable, reliable, ever cleaner energy to America. Because it's only human to work toward a brighter future. Learn more at chevron.com.